Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go! That has been a long time coming.
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about, you know, the Iditarod. And that kicked off in front of hundreds of fans again in Anchorage today for the first time in 2 years. I'm your host, Casey Grove. The Iditapod is a production of Alaska Public Media. That clip off the top comes courtesy of the Iditarod Trail Committee and Iditarod.com. And I'm joined in the studio once again by Alaska Public Media reporters extraordinaire Tegan Hanlon, Jeff Chen, and Lex Trinan, our little team on the Iditapod this year. Folks, in 3 words or less, what are your thoughts on this year's ceremonial start?
I would say normal-ish, snowy, and joyful.
Good, good. Okay. Lex.
Don't wear down.
Jeff. 3 words or less, your thoughts on the ceremonial start of the Iditarod?
Trans women musher.
Yeah, that's right. We have the first openly trans woman in the Iditarod, a Payuk Raitan, mushing in the Iditarod this year, returning to the Iditarod. And we will have an interview coming up on a future episode of the Iditapod with her that actually Shady Grove Oliver, a colleague of ours, had put together from interviews for a piece in The Guardian. If you haven't seen that yet, maybe check that out. But yeah, definitely in a future episode, we will be hearing from a Payuk Raitan. Tegan, you had a younger race fan describe what the scene was like today at the ceremonial start. And who was that?
I did, from Adina Roberts, an elementary school student in Anchorage who was very busy collecting dog booties. But she did take a minute to tell us about today's weather.
I mean, it's super snowy, and it's kind of like a blizzard.
It was kind of like a blizzard out there after many days, almost weeks, of ice and rain in Anchorage. It was finally snowy today.
Yeah, definitely the thing that seemed to characterize today's ceremonial start, other than the fact that it's back, was just the snow was dumping out there, and it felt very wintry, like you said, after a few days of just like melting stuff. And yeah, that's right. The Iditarod held its big parade thing, ceremonial start, they call it, the first time since 2020 due to the pandemic, of course. We're definitely going to talk about the ceremonial start a bunch today. We also have a listener question and an answer, multiple answers, actually. We have a dog profile again, and I guess a missed connection. We're going to talk about that in a little
Right.
But first, just to quickly explain what the ceremonial start is. The Iditarod, of course, runs 1,000 miles from Willow to Nome, but the original start was in Anchorage back in the day, and they've kind of kept that as a ceremonial sort of parade thing where they have all the mushers come downtown, right in the middle of downtown Anchorage. They take snow and pile it up and make a dog sled course through town. And it's kind of a chance for a bunch of fans who aren't going to be able to be out on the trail because it's a remote wilderness race to come see it. Generally, that's where reporters are asking questions of the mushers, too, before that start. And it's just kind of a big party scene. There's, you know, parties going on the city trails through town, and the course isn't timed. That 11 miles is not part of the race time, but it's just a kind of a fun event where people do, you know, tailgating. They call it trailgating, cook food, have drinks out on the trail, kids playing around. Tegan, I understand from some of the folks that you talked to, there was a lot of talk of getting back to normal, right?
Yeah, I was downtown for a while this morning before the mushers kicked off at 10 a.m. and started racing through the city. And yeah, a lot of mushers and the race marshal, who we'll hear from in a second, were talking about just, you know, after missing the ceremonial start last year, that this year just feels a little bit closer to normal, I guess I say. There were still a lot of face masks. There was limited access to, they call it like the Musher parking lot, where the Mushers, you know, park their trucks on side streets in Anchorage, and then they get ready, they pull their dogs out of the truck, line them out. And normally there's people just walking through and chatting with the Mushers and taking selfies with the dogs. But this year that was all roped off, so you could kind of scoot around the sides where there was a fence between you and the Mushers. But there wasn't sort of that one-on-one access like there had been in the past. Anyway, saying, you know, that gets us to that normal-ish. It was closer to normal than last year. Here's Mark Nordman, who is a race marshal, talking about his take on the ceremonial start this year.
You know, besides this beautiful, the optics of this beautiful snow, it feels really good. It feels like we're back. You know, definitely all our handlers, myself, officials, pilots, volunteers, mushers, testing routinely. They tested Thursday, they tested here, they test tomorrow, they'll test on the trail. And I think it's exciting. I mean, we got music in the background, it feels like Mardi Gras again.
Mardi Gras again, that's a good way to describe it. It kind of cracks me up to hear Mark, because he doesn't have to do too much wrangling during the ceremonial start. He's more of like, he's down the trail making sure that things go smoothly during the race. So he gets to kind of chill out and relax and watch the teams take off. We mentioned there was kind of limited access down there. So because of coronavirus concerns, the COVID-19 protocols for the Iditarod meant that we were not able to go right up to the dog trucks. But Lex, you were able to talk to some of the mushers downtown, and how did that go?
It went well, Casey. I had my mic boom, you know, that's the extendable mic, so I could keep my 6 feet away from the mushers and kind of call them over through the fences. There's a lot of different experiences coming to the race. You know, some people, they've done this many times before. Others, it was their first time, and they've been dreaming of this for decades even. You know, I think of Bridget Watkins. She's a longtime musher, but she, you know, told me on a phone call a couple of weeks ago how just getting to the start line would be such a victory for her after she survived that moose attack that we've talked about before. You know, we saw some really emotional moments with her. She was, you know, hugging her dogs, and you could just tell she was really, just really emotional being there at the start. There's also another musher, Gerhard Tihart, who is a South African musher. He said he first learned about mushing back in 2002. He kept some Siberian huskies at his home near Cape Town, South Africa. He had someone tell him about this race called the Iditarod, and he didn't really believe it at first. It was 120 degrees, he said, in his home near Cape Town. And somehow, though, he got his hands on a DVD of the Iditarod. You know, fast forward 20 years, he bounced around the world and ended up in Alaska. He contacted Mitch Seavey, didn't think that a superstar like Iditarod champion Mitch Seavey would ever respond to him. But Mitch did and took him on as sort of a handler, and he's letting Gerhard Tihart run his dogs. So I caught up with him right at the start. He was about ready to pull his snow hook, and here's what he had to say.
Never, never, not in a million years I would have believed I would be standing here. Told my wife this morning, we've watched it enough on TV. We are here now.
And the other part of the ceremonial start that I liked to ask people about, and, you know, people were definitely happy to talk about, was kind of what they were, you know, advertising. And I use that word loosely. You know, there were, of course, sponsors that people were showing off. You know, some people had foundations. Tihart actually has a foundation to help American service members, veterans who are struggling. There were also some more, you know, political statements. You know, one musher was pushing for vaccines, COVID-19 vaccines. We also mentioned Apayauk Raitan, and she was flying a trans flag, which was really cool to see, flying that down through the start line. And so that was really cool. Another flag we saw out there was the blue and yellow of Ukraine. I talked to musher Hugh Neff. He's running the dogs of veteran musher Jim Lanier and Anna Bondarenka. Bondarenka is actually from Ukraine, and so he was waving that flag. Here's what he had to say about that.
You know, we're just trying to make everybody proud and represent not only Alaska, but the people of the Ukraine. And, you know, it's tough to watch right now.
So yeah, with all of the fans out on course and everywhere, you know, people are just trying to connect to the fans, spread the love of mushing, spread whatever other messages they care about, they're passionate about. So it's kind of a unique piece of the Iditarod.
Yeah, definitely seeing the flags out there today kind of caught my eye, and seeing the trans flag go through, everybody was cheering so loudly for Raitan going through that trailgate area when she came through. It was awesome. And I guess it's kind of interesting too to hear from Hugh about such a serious current event that's going on, when he also is known for wearing a cat in the hat like Dr. Seuss hat. So a little bit of serious and silly mixed in, I guess.
Yeah, there was definitely some silliness in there too.
Tegan, you were downtown and at the Trailgate area, but first let's talk about downtown. You were able to catch up with some mushers too, yeah?
Yeah, and you know, one thing I wanted to talk about that I was asking them is, I was thinking this morning about just like other sports people are involved with, you know, whether it's a big basketball game, a marathon, a ski tournament. There's usually like some sort of food routine before that. You're thinking about like, should I carbo load? Like, you know, I'm drinking a lot of Gatorade. I don't know. Just, and so I was curious what mushers eat as their last meal before they head out on the trail. So I asked a handful of mushers about that. One of them was Paige Drobny, who lives in Interior and has a dog kennel there with her husband. And she was saying she gets like a little bit nervous before the Iditarod start, so she eats some childhood comfort food. Here's Paige.
Generally, before the start of the race, I do get kind of nervous, and I don't really eat very well in general. Like when I'm out on the trail, like I just don't feel like eating. So we kind of make fun of me. I'm like, I have to eat like kid food. So it's like probably chicken tenders and french fries or something, and a Coke, because it's like the only thing that I can like kind of shove down. And so nothing really super exciting, but kid food.
That feels pretty comforting though.
Yeah. Yep. The comfort food is definitely what I need.
That was Paige talking by her dog truck this morning. You can hear one of the dogs on her team was super vocal and ready to get moving while I was talking to her. But yeah, it was kind of varied asking mushers what their go-to meal was before, you know, racing 1,000 miles on Sunday, starting to race 1,000 miles. I also asked your Lasith Olsom what his go-to meal was, and here's his take.
As far as meals, we got Grandma Joyce at home. She always cooks us a big meal almost every day at this time of the year. But yeah, we're gonna go home there and eat a big meal, and she normally has my favorite chocolate cake and all that stuff. So
Yor described that grandma as his like adopted grandma here in Alaska. Yor is from Norway but lives in Willow, and he talked a little bit too. He has a newborn baby at home, so a lot of you know, today and tomorrow morning is just spending extra time with his wife and his baby before he heads out on the trail. This is a little bit of an aside from the food, but I thought it was interesting talking to Yor. He was saying that his team is really young this year. I asked him if he was, you know, what his goals were for this year's race, since he's won in the past, and he said that he thinks it might be a slower race for him this year. He's really planning to kind of take it easy and train some of these younger dogs. But back to food. One other person I asked was Chad Stoddard about his meal plans for Sunday, and it was a pretty traditional breakfast.
Tomorrow morning, I'll probably eat something, lots of carbs probably, lots of bread, eggs, just eat a really hearty breakfast for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Just some eggs. So that was the pre-Iditarod food roundup. And then we also caught up with Jeff King, who, you know, at the last minute took over Nick Petit's team. And we talked a little bit on the first podcast episode of the season about how Jeff King took over Nick Petit's team at the last minute. And Nick Petit had already sent all of his drop bags out to the checkpoints. So Jeff will be out on the trail and opening those drop bags and figuring out what's inside. So I asked him if he thinks he'll like the same foods as Nick Petit does.
I'm hoping. I'm hoping it's not full of French sardines or something.
Okay.
So Nick Petit is from France, and he tested positive for COVID-19 this week, so he could not race. And Jeff King, four-time champion, has stepped in. Jeff and I also talked a little bit about what he's been doing. So he found out on a Tuesday that he was starting the Iditarod on a Saturday, the official race start on the Sunday. So I asked him, like, you know, in those few days when you have to drive down to Anchorage, what does that look like for you? And he said he's tried to spend the past few days just getting to know Nick Petit's team. Here's how he describes Petit's dogs.
I feel like it's a big litter of golden retriever puppies. They're so damn friendly. Really fun.
So it sounds like Jeff will be running some friendly dogs on the trail. He said he's been going to a chiropractor a lot in the past few months. So he said his body is feeling really good going into the race. But he said he is expecting to be pretty tired this year since he hasn't been training and planning to run 1,000 miles.
Yeah, I'm super curious to see what happens there. And this sort of unexpected entry into the Iditarod is going to be his 30th running. Is that right?
I think so.
We think so. Yeah, Jeff is an interesting character, and definitely we have a special connection to Jeff's survival in a way. We, a couple of years ago, of course, did that live episode of the Iditapod, and it was something like almost 2 hours long. And definitely if folks want to go back and listen to that, that still does exist out in the world. But if you missed it, Jeff had to go and have like emergency surgery right after we recorded that at the Beartooth here in Anchorage, and had to drop out of that year's Iditarod because of some intestinal issues that he had to get repaired, like I said, in an emergency surgery. And that was the year that Sean Underwood jumped onto his dog sled and took his team, the A team, basically. So not unprecedented. And definitely that is the subject of our listener question that we'll be getting to here in just a little bit. You also ran into some folks from out of town downtown, right?
I did. And I was talking to the couple. They caught my eye because they both had these dog face masks on. I'm not going to do it justice describing just how epic they were, but there were ears on them. And all you could really see of our two human interview subjects were their eyes, but they had like a snout and a mouth and whiskers, and it kind of covered their entire head. So anyway, they caught my eye when they were walking by, and I stopped them to ask, you know, what their thoughts were on the ceremonial start being back in Anchorage. And it turned out that they had come in from Seattle just for the Iditarod. Here's Sonora and Joshua Troger.
We recently moved to Seattle. I grew up in LA, which is the exact opposite of this. And it's my 30th birthday. And I read Call of the Wild when I was 8. It was the book that got me into reading. And ever since then, I've been fascinated by mushing and dog sledding and the Arctic. I actually got to mush when I was studying abroad in Finland. So this is like being here is just so amazing, and I'm a crier, so I've gotten a little verklempt multiple times on this trip. And yeah, this is just really cool.
So Sonora was stoked to be at the Iditarod ceremonial start, and I guess to go back to our three-word description, like that joyfulness, there was definitely a lot of just happy energy down at the ceremonial start today. There was a lot of people taking selfies with the dogs in the background, even though there was that little fence between them. There was one scene with Dallas Seavey. I was hoping we'd get to talk to Dallas today, but unfortunately it didn't work out, but I'm sure we'll catch him down the trail. There was a story by the Associated Press that recently came out that with Dallas Seavey saying that he thinks this is going to be his last Iditarod for a while so he can spend more time with his daughter. Dallas is gunning for his 6th Iditarod win this race, and if he gets that 6th win, he'll be the winningest musher in Iditarod history. Anyway, I didn't get to catch up with Dallas, but I was thinking about him because I was walking on the sidewalk and one of the race fans next to me was really hoping to get a selfie with Dallas and was yelling to him from the side. And he told her from kind of the middle of the street, selfies are a big no-no this year. Apparently, COVID protocols call for no selfies, but he did offer to pose with his arms out in the middle of the street, and she took a handful of photos. So hopefully we'll hear from Dallas out on the trail about, you know, what's going through his head as he races for potentially a big win, but also knowing that this might be his last Iditarod for a while.
Interesting. Yeah. It sounds like a lot of people were clamoring for his attention and just trying to get his ear. And hopefully we will get to hear from him later. But it is interesting just that he's kind of the guy that everybody's gunning for. I think that that's fair to say that probably most of those top mushers are thinking, how am I going to beat Dallas? You know? And if you'd like to hear more about that, We have a story by our pal Lex Trinan at alaskapublic.org if you want to go check that out. One of the really interesting things to me, I guess, about this whole spectacle, if you just stop for a second and think about how exceptional it is to see dog teams mushing in downtown Anchorage, it's also interesting to see them mushing down the city trails that we all use so much, bike trails in the summertime, ski and bike trails in the wintertime, and then all of a sudden, it's a dog sled course, you know? As you get away from downtown, there's kind of more room, I think, for families with kids to sort of spread out. It's not as cloistered. There's not like hundreds of people all in one, you know, avenue of downtown Anchorage. It's like those city trails. And so there's kids playing on, you know, hills of snow, having snowball fights and things like that. And I thought this year I was just going to walk down from my house because it's not too far from the trail and check that out.
Well, I'm just walking down this little side trail off of Chester Creek, and other people are from the neighborhood are walking down as well. Some kids here on the trail having a snowball fight as we are approaching the bigger crowd. There's a dog team going by. Bunch of kids playing up on the hill here. Snowball fights, King of the Mountain maybe.
And that's where I ran into a woman named Mandy King, who, you know, I just kind of asked the standard question, like, why are you here?
Oh, to see the same mushers year after year, and we know some of them have history, and just to, yeah, it's just such a special time and special event. Yeah, it just means a lot seeing those dogs, knowing how far they're going to go, knowing this is just the start of a long journey. Totally. It's just really cool.
Do you have a favorite musher or somebody you're rooting for in particular?
I love Martin Boozer. His wife was actually my first grade teacher, and oh, so really? I've always cheered for him. But yeah, I think I just like them all.
You must have heard a lot of stories about the Iditarod from her.
Yes, he actually came to our class and gave us rides and stuff, and yeah, just always meant a lot.
And Mandy's daughter Hazel said that she was having a good time there.
Hazel, are you having fun down here?
Yeah.
Why do you like watching the Iditarod go by?
I don't know.
Do you like dogs?
Yeah.
Why do you like dogs?
Because I like to see them poop on the track.
Have they been pooping?
Yeah.
That seems like it's funny to you.
Yeah.
Is there anything else about the dogs besides them pooping that you like?
Because they chase cats.
Huh? They chase cats. That's fun. Yeah.
And what do you have here?
Oh, did you get some booties?
Yeah.
Did they throw those to you, or did they just fall off?
I don't know.
Just got them. A little memento for later.
That's your kid interview. So that's Hazel. She definitely thinks she's funny, because I guess she is. Right after we had talked, she found a sticker on the ground from a local brewery, a cidery, if you will, which reminded me that I actually had some Iditapod stickers in my pocket. So I gave her one of those stickers, and she immediately dropped the other sticker on the ground, which I thought was hilarious. Took ours.
Thanks, Hazel.
Yeah, thank you, Hazel. One of our other neighbors, a guy named Mike Lovejoy, was just right nearby announcing each dog team as they went by. And here's what that sounded like.
It's never like an hour.
In her 10th Iditarod from Willow, Alaska, number 40, Karen Hendrickson.
Mike was doing such a good job announcing there, I didn't really have the heart to tell him it's Karen Hendrickson, but, you know, I'm sure she gets that a lot. And just a little bit farther up the trail, where sort of the more official, I guess I would say, trail gate people were, Tegan, you had run into a woman named Julie Sweeten, who was also doing some announcing, right?
I was going to say she was also moonlighting as an announcer. I don't know if even moonlighting. She was the announcer. She had a microphone and like a big speaker behind her. She had this like rad fur hat on and glitter on her face. And she was definitely hyping up the crowd at this like traditional tailgate area. There was a lot of people there, a lot of people taking photos, a lot of kids collecting booties. There were some ushers that were throwing candy from their sleds, which was very exciting for everyone there. But yeah, here's Julie, you know, kind of hyping the crowd up.
And pack number 21, Grand Prairie, Alberta. Has anyone ever been through there? It is a great town. Right outside northwest of the town, there's a little spot to like for your RVs to park. It's a, what is that called, a campground? The campground has the best showers in all of Alberta. So if you're driving up, I got to drive up in May, you know, bringing a van up, got to shower there.
So Julie was not only giving the names of the mushers and their race records, but also sometimes providing some like hot travel tips. But I talked to Julie a little bit about, you know, what brings her out to the Iditarod. And she talked about how it's so nice to be out in March with the snow and the light returning in Alaska. And it's just like this sort of like rejuvenating period of the winter. She also talked about just this, you know, return to normal-ish.
The vibe is full circle for us. The last party we all had together, this is like our big crew of friends in Alaska. Like friends came up from Homer, from Kenai, down from Talkeetna, all over. And the last big party we all had, especially in a public place, was Iditarod 2020, and that's like right before the world shut down. So this is full circle for us, definitely.
And I guess that kind of brings us full circle to the start of this episode. It's just that, you know, the ceremonial start, it seemed like in a lot of ways was just kind of a return to closer to normal after a very unusual 2021 race.
All right. Well, now it's time for our listener question. This comes from Anna Belkin. Anna?
Hi, I'm Anna. I'm in Brooklyn, New York, and thinking about Nick Petit's team being taken over by another musher last minute made me wonder what other reasons might a musher mush with another musher's team? Because I know he's not the only person who, you know, for whom that's happening this year. And if you are a musher running a team that, you know, where the dogs belong to someone else, and you win, like what happens to the prize? Who gets the purse and who gets the truck? Is that arranged beforehand, or is the assumption like you're probably not gonna win? Okay, that's it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the question, Anna. All the way from Brooklyn in New York City. Tegan, you got multiple answers for this because it sounds like there isn't just one answer, right?
Yeah, I think the answer kind of varies depending on the musher. One person I asked was Mark Nordman, the race marshal, and he brought up that like last minute Nick Petit, Jeff King swap is really unusual, but here's what's more typical.
Let's take Martin Boozer for instance. He'll have two, in the past he's had himself and two other teams. We call them puppy teams. Of course they're not puppies, but the younger dogs just getting, it's kind of like the farm team, you know. Just getting them ready to go, have a nice casual trip to Nome. So, and people will go back and forth with dogs within kennels. You know, if Martin has three drivers, he might, even today, they might decide who's going to take this dog. But they've all been around him all year.
So as Mark brought up, there's quite a few teams in this year's Iditarod and prior Iditarods where there's mushers running puppy teams of kennels of more veteran mushers like Dallas Seavey, Mitch Seavey, Martin Boozer, Jeff King. They call them a puppy team in the race or a JV team or the B team. And usually that team is not trying to win. So they're not going to have to make the decision for that team whether who's going to get the truck. They're there to kind of train the dogs up to be on that A team the following year or a couple years down the road. There's other instances, too, where you might be running another musher's dogs. I'm not sure if there's any teams in this year's race, but in the past, there are folks who will come in and rent an entire team from a veteran musher or maybe a retired musher, and they'll pay them to use their dogs in the race. I asked Mark the question of what happens if, you know, you're borrowing or renting or using someone's dogs that aren't from your own kennel, you know, who gets the truck? And he said he didn't know of an instance where that had happened yet. But, you know, it's something that they'd have to work out musher to musher. I did also talk to Chad Stoddard, who we heard from earlier, who's eating eggs before the race starts. And here's whose team Chad is running.
Being part of Dallas's team was something that appealed to me after I'd finished my last Iditarod. I had heard that he was needing help at his kennel, and I reached out to him, and we had a meeting. And essentially, it was just wanting to be a part of a strong team, both human team and dog team. And so it's worked out well. I've spent a lot of time kind of tagging along with Dallas and learning from him, really. I love to be, I didn't grow up and wasn't born into a mushing family. So for me, when I discovered dog mushing 10 years ago, is how do I learn more? How do I progress in the sport? And the best way to do that is to learn from others. And I've been very fortunate to learn from Lance Mackey, who I spent 2 years with up in Fairbanks. I got to raise a group of puppies with him, and I did my qualifying races with him. I've also spent a year in with Sven Haltman, who's another Iditarod musher, and this year with Dallas. So I feel very fortunate to have some really great mentors, and hope to apply all that knowledge and see what we can do this year.
So Chad described the team that he's hoping to take to Nome this year as the JV Dallas team. It's a mix of youngsters and veteran dogs, and the idea is that those younger dogs learn from the veteran dogs who have already been to Nome and understand what the Iditarod is like. I asked Chad, you know, if he does happen to win, how will they split the race winnings? And he said, I don't think I have to worry about that. But here's what he said when I asked, well, you know, all mushers do walk away with some sort of cash prize. What happens to that?
If I win a special award, like a humanitarian award or a most improved or something like that, that would go to me. Otherwise, the winnings and things like that, that goes right back into dog food, to the whole operation. So, yep. So any winnings that would happen would just go right back into the kennel, which helps me in the long run, too. So as a lot of mushers will probably tell you, none of us are doing this for money. That's for sure, because there's really no money involved in it. Everything that you put into it goes right back into the dog. So I'm totally content with that, because I feel very fortunate. You know, every single day you wake up and you get to do what you love to do, and that's really what it's all about. So if you enjoy what you do, right, every day, you never feel like you get to have to work a day in your life, and I feel that way. So
I thought I'd get just one more take while I was downtown today. So I also talked to Sean Williams, who's running a team from four-time Iditarod champion Martin Boozer's kennel, and here is what Sean said he will do with the race winnings.
Well, you know, the money's been going the wrong direction for quite some time, so. And taxes are just right around the corner for anybody who's self-employed, so that money's going straight to the IRS.
So Sean is using his race winnings to pay his taxes.
It's got to come from somewhere, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, Anna, that answers your question. I think the real answer is it kind of depends, it seems like, and whatever the arrangement is, it may be arranged ahead of time. Generally, you're going to have like a younger musher maybe taking a B team or the JV team, as we called it. And then these cases where you've got Jeff King, a veteran musher, jumping onto the sled of Nick Petit, and those are definitely championship quality dogs. I don't know that that's happened a whole lot. So we're just going to have to see what does happen with that. Anyway, we love getting those questions. Thank you for that, Anna. The best way to send us your question is to record yourself on a voice memo. Send that to us by email to iditarod@alaskapublic.org. That's iditarod@alaskapublic.org. Definitely a fun recurring segment that we like to have here on the Iditapod. We have another segment that we are bringing back this year, and that is the dog profiles. Lex, you have today's dog profile. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so this one is with musher Eric Kelly. I was talking to him before the start of the race. He's out of Willow. And like a lot of people, when you ask, you know, what dog would you choose for our little dog profile segment, they kind of refer to a story, a specific instance in time that kind of really forged a connection that they have with a certain dog. So here's Eric Kelly talking about his dog, Steely.
Steely, this little black girl right here with one blue eye. She's kind of her butt sticking out. Not right there. Yeah. Her name's Steely. We got her a couple years ago, and she was a pretty good dog. And last year, one of our main leaders, who's not with us, they suffered an injury. And Steely just took the team over like she owned it. And ever since then, she's been our main leader. And the dog lot knows she's the boss. And she did that all on her own. She just took over the main position in the team. And that was last year during the Willow 300. I had my other main leader got hurt, and I had to put her out front, and she just stepped right in, and it's just she hasn't turned back. So.
And how old is he?
She is 4. Yeah. So she's she's one of our awesome dogs. She's a little girl, but she's awesome.
And can you describe her personality? You know, I don't know, maybe not just in racing, but in general.
She's a lover. She likes to please. She loves hugs. She loves attention. But she is, when she gets on the dog line, she starts to shake. Her adrenaline goes, and she's forward. You know, there's no playing around. In the dog lot, she'll want to play. You let her off. She wants to run around and do tricks and play. Once she's hooked in her harness, she knows it's time to do business. So. Yeah, she's a great one.
And you said she leads.
Yeah, she's our main leader. She'll be in lead today, tomorrow, and we'll switch her back in the team sometimes, but she gets kind of mad. She's named after the Grateful Dead steal your face symbol.
That's what that is.
Yeah, it's not Steely Dan. It's a different musical reference.
Got it. Well, that's awesome. I love those dog profiles. I know a lot of people do, and you can also find those at alaskapublic.org. You can find Steely there. We have our past dog profiles from past Iditarods. We have another thing coming up now that I don't know if I want to call it a recurring segment, because who knows, maybe this will take off, but probably not. But it comes from, I think originally from Craigslist, the missed connections, right, Jeff? How do you want to introduce this?
Well, I was walking down the trail this morning and I saw a sign, and I just, you know, I thought it might be like a Iditarod protest sign, and I followed them for a second to see what the sign said, and once I saw what it said, I had to stop and talk to them. And so I chatted with someone named Athena, who lives out in Palmer, and she's looking for the love of her life, and she had this misconnection with this man at an airport. And so here's Athena talking.
Yeah, so 2 months ago, I met someone at the airport, and he was a very nice man, and we talked for about 3 hours. And afterwards, I didn't get his name or number, but we talked about the Iditarod. So I'm here at the Iditarod trying to find this man. Yeah, he's about 5'9 to 6', and he has dirty blonde hair, and it's short, and he came up here to be a traveling nurse. He likes coffee, and his stepdad grew up in the military, or he grew up in the military, and he lived in Germany for a while, I think. If anyone's out there and who knows of this man, I mean, just let me know, I guess. My name's Athena. I have a bright green sign, so I feel like there is hope.
I love that. All right, let's hope that it is a recurring segment, because I don't know if you can get better radio than that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to be looking out at each checkpoint for some misconnections or, like, you know, whoever this man is.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, why not? You can send us your questions, your Iditarod-related missed connections here. We'll take whatever people will send us.
Yeah, I got a photo of them, and so that'll be on the website.
Good, good, good. So this unnamed 5'9 to 6' tall, dirty blonde guy who...
Travel nurse.
Who likes coffee.
You can get in touch with us at iditarod@alaskapublic.org. Jeff can try to get you in touch with Athena.
I forgot to get her number, too.
Okay. Well, we have her name, so...
We have her name.
Yeah. Great. Yes, I hope that works out for everyone involved. Well, that is about all the time that we have for today. We will be back with another episode of the Iditapod coming up on Monday, I think. We're going to take the day off on Sunday for the first time ever and get recharged for the race as it takes off. Before we go, quickly, where are you going to be the next time we talk to you? Let's start with you, Lex.
I will be in Nikolai, and so I'll bounce through a few of the checkpoints. I'll leave on Monday in a little plane, a two-seater, and end up in Nikolai, where hopefully I'll have enough internet to send off a story.
And you were going with the famous pilot Rob of past Iditapods, who we almost never hear from because he doesn't like to be on mic, but he is a recurring character, if you will. Jeff, where are you going to be the next time we talk? Do you know?
I don't know. I think on Sunday I'll be at Finger Lake, and then I'm going to meet up with Lex at Nikolai.
Okay, sounds good. All right. Well, until then, our theme music is by the band Sassafras. Thanks to Tegan Hanlon, Jeff Chen, and Lex Trinan for being here. I'm your host, Casey Grove, and until next time, happy trails. Maybe you guys will record a snack attack with Lex and Jeff.
What's a snack attack?
It used to work better when it was Ben and Zach. It rhymed, but that's where you guys talk about the snacks that you have.
Oh.
and even share them if you guys are up for that with each other.
Not sharing.
Oh. Do we have to do this live on a podcast or what?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. No, we can film it too, and it can be an unveiling.
Yeah. It's in your contract. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I forgot to read the fine print.
Yeah.